Blog Talk Radio.
This is ATL Designer, the host of In the Mood, and you are listening to Unmasked with authoress Terry E. Lyle, right here on Blog Talk Radio. You know, Terry brings you all the hot topics for your listening pleasure. Each and every Friday, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Just go to www.blogtalkradio.com. That's www.blogtalkradio.com. And you can also reach Terry direct. Her number is 347-945-6003. That's 347-945-6003. So log in, listen, enjoy. I'll see you there.
I'm doing welcome everybody to another episode of Unmasked with authoress Terry E. Lyle and Chris. I want to thank all my listeners from north to south and east to west and all the people listening in the 30 countries around the globe. Thank you for tuning in each and every weekend. And we have an exciting show tonight for you, Mr. Larry Pye. This guy, oh, he is phenomenal. He is a retired probation officer. He has a BA in sociology and an MBA. He teaches anger management and life skill classes. He currently resides in Inglewood, California. His book, The Twinkle Box, is also bestseller. And like he said, it's an engrossing psychological murder mystery loosely based on a true story. Now, everybody who writes know that I don't care whether you call it nonfiction or fiction. Anytime you write something, it's going to have some of the truth in there because you can't write something without making it a part of you. So this is going to be an awesome show. I can't wait to let my co-host ask his questions, and I'm going to ask my questions. But, yes, Mr. Pye, he is phenomenal. How you doing, Chris?
I'm doing good, Terry. How are you doing tonight?
I've had better days, but, you know, I just got to forge through. And anybody out there who would like to talk to our guest or ask a question or have a comment, just dial 347-945-6003. If you hit the one key, that lets me know that you got something that you want to say. If not, I'll just keep you in a mute status so you don't have to worry about nobody hearing what you got to say or think. So with that being said, Chris, I'll let you go ahead and ask Larry his first question.
Okay. Hi, Larry. This is Chris Michael Ward. My premier question is: I read that you as a probation officer. Was that a lifelong dream, or did that just happen by a fluke?
sort of happened by a fluke. I mean, I was, believe it or not, I wanted to be a cartoonist. I wanted to be a syndicated cartoonist. Graduated from college, yeah, and then it was like, so you're looking for jobs, and you apply for something, and they happen to be the one that sort of called me, and although I've always liked people, so I enjoyed my time as a probation officer, but that wasn't my initial goal. I wanted to be a syndicated cartoonist, like you know, Charlie Brown, and I love, you know, being a cartoonist and stuff, but like sometimes life just has different paths. And so I wound up being a probation officer, and I really was taking this job. Like I said, okay, you know what? I'll take this job until one of these syndicates call me because my artwork is so great. Okay, I'll just take this job. And the next thing you know, it has become your career. You know, it's like life happens. You know, So that's how that came about.
Yeah, life will do that to you. It'll sneak up on you. You think you're going to be doing something for a minute. The minutes become years. And like you said, my goodness. But, you know, I have a question about the fact that you were a probation officer. You know, when you watch TV and you hear about the lies that these people are always trying to be slick when they're talking to the probation officer. So did you hear a lot of that, or was you somebody who was trying to give a person a chance if they weren't just messing up? Or were you somebody who just, no gray area, just black and white?
Well, see, with me, I guess sort of being like, you know, my major was sociology, my minor was psychology. But at the same time, I was, I guess because of my personality, that I was sort of laid back. I mean, like, I was fair. And my whole attitude was always like, hey, listen, you know, I'm not judging you. I wasn't there when you did whatever you did. But if you're ready to get yourself together now, I will help you. But it was almost like, don't try to play me, okay? If you're in here, you're trying to take your business, I will help you. I mean, I wasn't gullible. And I got to learn that over a period of time, you know, you can tell there are a lot of people that really need to be on probation, but then you run across others that it wasn't like they were necessarily bad people. A lot of times it might have been, well, you know, Mr. Pye, seriously, I didn't actually do that, but I had been unemployed for 4 or 5 years. I finally got a job. I didn't have a time to keep taking off, going to court for 2 or 3 months. So I plea bargained. And the agreement was, okay, you agree to probation and a fine. And so, you know, you get a lot of that. And see, I worked in Inglewood. It was really 90% of these cases were plea bargains. I mean, had they had money to hire attorneys, a lot of these people would have gotten off. You know, but you did have some bad actors. But but over a period of time, you know, you get to see, you know, who's who. I mean, what they're made of, who's gaming. And I think because of my attitude, that is how a lot of them just open up to me. I mean, even when I've had people, when they got off probation, they were like coming back, you know, to take me to lunch and things like that, because they just sometimes wanted somebody to talk to, because I wasn't judgmental.
Right. Sometimes you just got to be a listening ear, because sometimes we as humans, you know, sometimes it could be that one step, that one thing, that bad choice that you make, and you make it for the right reasons. Like, for instance, you have siblings younger than you, and you steal something because you want to teach them, you know. And even though society is wrong, you know, but sometimes you got to look down the road and see, is this person an obituary problem, or this is something that's just happened, you know, and what are the circumstances?
You know, you're right. No, that's sort of how I felt. I mean, see, my last maybe 15, 20 years, Terry, I was a supervisor, so I didn't have a caseload. I supervised the probation officers, and sometimes they were more interesting than some of these clients. Okay, but I was always fair. I always believed in being fair. And that was just sort of my attitude, even as a supervisor. My thing was, don't mess over people just because you can. You know, sometimes, you know, be kind. And I would run into things like that as a supervisor, and always just don't abuse people just because you can, or you think you have some authority over them. That just with the flick of a pen, you try to ruin somebody's life that didn't have to be. And so, you know, I was like that. So that's, I think that's I'm sorry, would you
say? I said, you're absolutely right. I'm glad that you was able to have courage and be kind, because since you hold a position, don't make you the bad person, because if you want to be the bad person and everything, somebody, they might come looking for you, and then you'll have a problem on your door where your family lives at. You know, so people got to understand, you can't just because you've got a position and think you're just going to dog somebody out, because you might be dealing with a nutcase, and he might find out where you live at, and he might want to come to your house and create a problem.
No, you're right, Terry, and sometimes people get in these positions of authority, and they forget, like, well, you know, people are still human. I remember, you know, being a supervisor, okay, you rarely would get a probationer that wants to speak to the supervisor. So it has to be really serious, because they don't want to cause friction with their probation officer. So when they request to see the supervisor, and I had one case where this guy, he wanted to talk to the supervisor because he felt he was being dealt with unfairly. He had gone to Las Vegas for the weekend. And so when he came back, what he had done, it's like maybe his probation officer may have little whatnots in his office. Okay, for example, if you like certain little, you know, you might have certain little figurines you like. Well, this probation officer, while he was in Vegas, he brought back a souvenir for the probation officer. So the probation officer said, oh, you went to Vegas this weekend? You didn't get permission. I'm taking you back to court. Okay, so the guy said, well, I didn't get arrested. I didn't do anything. He said, I don't care. You shouldn't have left without permission. So the guy wanted to speak to the supervisors. So we came in. He was explaining to me. I said, how did you know the guy went to Vegas? Did he get arrested or something? He says, no, he brought me back a souvenir. So so that's how I knew, and he didn't get permission. So I said, oh, okay, that's the only way you knew. He said, yeah. So I told the probationer, I said, would you sit in the lobby? I need to talk with the officer, okay? So I told the officer, I said, okay, this guy didn't get arrested. He went up to Vegas, and the only way you knew is he was stupid enough to try to be thoughtful and brought you back a little token. So now you're going to punish him for something that he shouldn't have done, but he didn't know, okay, that he should have gotten permission. So I told him, I said, use this as a learning tool, okay? I said, just let him know the next time, get permission, because had you got stopped or arrested, then they would have said you didn't have permission, and that was a complete violation. But this is a case, nothing happened, and this guy was trying to do the, you know, the right thing. You know, if he hadn't mentioned to you and brought you a gift, you wouldn't have known. I said, give him some slack. And so he said to me, well, why should I give him some slack, Mr. Pye? He was wrong. And I said, okay, let's go back a couple of years. People forget. I said, I had a deputy that was having a problem, and he came in early, and he was under the influence. I said, I called him in because he wasn't a bad deputy. And I said, you know what? You're having special problems. He was having domestic problems. So I want you to call up your sons, have your grown sons come and drive you, and we're going to let you call out sick. And don't let this happen again, because you just had a bad evening. You're not a bad person. And he stood up looking at me. He said, you did that? I said, yes, you were the officer that I did that for. I said, how soon we forget? I said, you, anyone else, you would have lost your career. And he said, oh, man, wow, I forgot about that. My bad. Then we called the guy back in.
My bad. That was my bad.
You know, and told, right, and we told the guy, I said, in the future, just come in and get permission before you go. So in case something happened, you're covered. You know, I told him, but your officer has agreed to give you, you know, he's going to give you some slack, but don't let it happen again. But that's what I'm saying. Now, maybe that was wrong, Terry, but to me that was human. How dare you penalize somebody for some information and nothing happened? You know, I mean, now, believe me, you know, I know a lot of supervisors, they didn't agree with me. Well, you know, he should have got weekends. You know, he didn't commit a crime. He didn't do anything. And he probably had been going up to Vegas, who knows, for years while on probation. Just never told the, you know, living in California, probation is what, like, could be a 5 or 6 hour drive. Okay, so they're not even thinking anything because of these conditions of probation say get permission. But, you know, they're signing these things. It's almost like two sheets of condition. Who remembers everything that you've signed? You know, but that's all I was just saying, Terry. That was my approach. Don't just, because you have the power, don't just, you know, be totally insensitive.
And you,
I mean,
might,
he could take that guy.
None of it was perfect.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
Chris, I know you got another question for Larry.
Yes,
sure.
I do. And I do have another question, but I want to say I understand what Larry's saying, and I agree with that. But my next question, Larry, for our viewers who don't know, you have a book out called The Twinkle Box, and it became an Amazon bestseller. Now, what are the perks? What are the perks of being an Amazon bestselling author?
Well, the pandemic kind of shut some things down for me. Prior to that, because the content of my book, believe it or not, Chris, I didn't even know ladies had book clubs other than Oprah Winfrey. Okay, once this came out, people were contacting me on Facebook that remembered me from high school. And so then there were a lot of women's book clubs, and they wanted to meet the author. They had purchased the book, so I would go to women's book clubs. I mean, that was one of the perks. I would get to meet all these ladies, and they had interesting stories because they read the book. And believe me, Chris, if there were 15 ladies in this book club, at least two or three were crying and saying, my goodness, you wrote my story. I was in an abusive relationship. How did you know? Did my girlfriend tell you about me? And I said, you know, I've never met any of you. I said, I'm just writing about real life experiences. I mean, and see, it wasn't necessarily a lady's book, but it's because it deals with so many issues. You know, domestic violence was one of the things that was in the book. So it almost became a thing where ladies can really relate to that. And I would listen to some of their stories and see, years ago I had a domestic violence caseload, and see, sometimes people don't know about domestic violence. You know, they think, well, it's just bored housewives or whatever. There were women in my group, some of them maybe been superintendents of different schools or whatever, that would say, you know, I was in an abusive relationship for 12 years. I stayed in there till my kids left and went to college, and then I left this guy. You know, and so they could relate to some of the things in my novel. And so that was one of the perks, was like going to these book clubs. I was going to at least maybe 3 or 4 book clubs a month. These ladies would contact me. And so with the pandemic, I mean, last year, I don't have to explain, you know, it was just like they just shut down a whole lot of stuff, because my ultimate goal was I wanted to, you know, be on I like to be on sure, like The View. I would like to be interviewed by Oprah. Got into this book, and I remember my wife read it, I said, I would love to really make some money, because I want to help people. And like there's just a need for programs to help abused women and things like that. I mean, good programs, okay? Because there are a lot of women out there are suffering, and they're locked in, and they stay for various reasons, for kids. I mean, sometimes they stay because low self-esteem, but other times it's like, you know, where do I go? And these are people just trying to, you know, get through their day-to-day life, but you've got a person that has issues. You know, so that is my goal. I wanted to be successful because I wanted to, you know, help these agents, or open up an agency where you can help these people. You know, that's one of, you know, like, I'm not like 30. I'm not in my 30s where I want a lot of money because, well, I need, what, 5 cars? You know, I need a house with winding staircase. No, when you're approaching 70, you've got different perspectives. I don't need a winding staircase. I probably couldn't get up it, okay? But I want to help people. And so many things bother me. The homeless, you know, that bothers me and stuff. So, you know, I have a whole different agenda now. And so, in fact, I'm writing a new book too that I'm working on, but I want to just get it out there because I want to help people. I mean, I know that may sound corny, but you know, that's where my head is.
Right. If you go to the Department of Social Services, they would happen to know all the little locations for battered women, like House of Ruth or whatever they may be, where some of these books that you have, you could donate that to them as part of their recovery. They learn that it's not okay to be stuck after they've been abused. It's okay to get back up on your feet.
Well, you know, you're right. Now, I just, like, maybe last year I hired a publicist. Because before that, I hadn't. And when I would go to these book club, I mean, these women book clubs, they would say, well, why aren't you on such and such program? Why don't you contact Tyler Perry? Why don't you contact this person? I said, you know, I don't know these people. I'm not hanging out with them. I would love to do that, but it's not like, you know, well, just call them up. Hi, you know, I'm Larry Pye. Hi, Oprah, how's it going? It doesn't work like that. But someone has to know somebody. They did, but what I was going to say, when I was teaching anger management before the pandemic at a drug and alcohol rehab facility, it was predominantly men, but then sometimes they would have co-ed. And when the women came in, these women that sat through, I gave them a little orientation about my book, they were so moved by that. I wound up giving, like, just passing out maybe 7 or 8 books to the women. And, you know, and the guys, well, hey, how come you didn't give us a book? I said, well, you know, you guys never requested it. you know, but it just really resonated to the women. So I see what you're saying. In fact, I'm going to probably tell my publicist that, because when I was a probation officer, we did refer people like the House of Uhuru, different little places where, but I hadn't necessarily thought the book was, see, it's not just a book on domestic violence. It's like a diverse characters, but it's just that when you read a book, certain things just resonate with you. And that seemed to resonate with these women that just, you know, where this is almost like turned into a book for women that wasn't necessarily my plan. See, I've got a bunch of diverse characters based on true stories. So I just got a bunch of stories that are, you know, flowing throughout my book. But it was just like when I would go to these meetings, it was domestic violence part just kind of grabbed these women. And, you know, and they were just like fascinated about like some of the characters because, you know, I've got interesting backstories to these characters. And like I said, once you get into my book, the backstories, they don't forgive their actions, okay? But it just helps the readers to understand because you would get to read the book and you'd be saying, my goodness, this guy is crazy. Or where did he find him? Or where did this come from? And then when you read the backstory, you say, oh.
About women being abused and stuff. Now, my last book is called Why Did I Stay So Long? That addresses women, senior citizens, and men who be abused. And it's like 40% of men being abused yearly, and people don't realize that. So with that being said, you just can't think it's all about women. Men are being abused as well. So I'm going to throw this question over to Chris. Go ahead, baby.
Sure.
All right. Well, and I just want to say, you know, you guys talk about how, you know, it doesn't work that way that you know people who, like, you don't know people that, you don't know, like, people like Oprah because of what you do. Because I've been in media for, like, 12 years, and I still don't know Oprah. So that I just want to second that emotion. But my question is, Larry, did you always, like, when you was growing up and stuff, you're not always wanting to be a probation officer, but was you always a writer? Did you always like write in your spare time?
Well, yeah, you know what I used to do, because when I would draw cartoons and even people remember me from high school, I would also write poetry. You know, I could maybe sometimes I'd be sketching people in class or sketching the teacher. And then I would almost write a little poem, a little something about her. I always sort of liked to do that. And so I did have a gift for that, but it was maybe years ago when I would start reading books. I really liked maybe James Patterson and you know, they were just different. There were different people that I really liked their books, certain authors. And then I started saying, you know what, I would like to do that. I would like to do that because it's just nice to kind of express yourself. And so you find yourself getting into something that you didn't really know that you would get into, but then you find out, well, I guess I have a talent for that. And so sometimes you surprise yourself. But yeah, but I always did sort of like to write. Yeah,
cool.
Looking back now, you know, and I always had certain little authors that maybe, you know, were influential. I would like certain stories, there were, you know, different black authors. I probably can't even remember some of their names, but I remember the guy, Devil in the Blue Dress, that guy, I really liked his writing. I think I did always sort of like to write.
Well, so let me ask you this question. Since you teach people how, you know, to deal with their anger issues and stuff like that, you know, I'm just going to say that your wife, she lucked up because she got a man who's teaching other people how to deal with their anger and all other kind of stuff, you know. And with that being said, you are a blessing to her. And if you got a daughter, that's a blessing for a female child to see that their father can love a woman without putting his hands on her or without being derogatory. You know, so I'm real impressed with that, Larry, that you go all the way, you know, to showing a person what it's like to be a good man, you know. And you got to be a good man for men as well as females. So the other people who don't know what it takes, they can learn from your example. And I'm really impressed behind that. Really impressed.
Well, thank you. And I think a lot of that comes from my mother. Even though I had a father that was there, my mother was the focus of our life. I mean, Dad always worked, but my mother was a strong mother, and it was this thing of teaching you the value of women. And it was sort of a thing, if you love your mother, then you don't abuse women, or would you want someone to treat your sister like that, you know? And just a little thing that come up, because see, I look back on my parents. My dad wasn't physically abusive to my mother, but my dad, I think, sometimes was verbal, but you know, he would say little things that, looking back, and I said, well, you know, that wasn't right. But I did come up with a respect for women, and that's what I passed that on to my son. And it was sort of a thing, like, if you're with somebody that you really, you know, aren't getting along with, then just leave the person. You don't have to stand there and abuse them verbally, physically. Just leave them, okay? You're just not the person for them. You know, I was thinking of an author. I remember Walter Mosley. That was the black author. I liked his stories. That kind of inspired me. But, yeah, but thank you for saying that. That's very kind. But that was always important, because even when I would teach anger management, because a lot of these guys, you know, they were, you know, in a drug program. They were in and out of prison. And a lot of them just had no foundation. Some of them weren't even aware that they were being abusive.
Exactly.
And then sometimes when the women were in there.
That's the kind of guy they look forward to, because that's all they knew at the house. So I applaud you for being the kind of man that was a good representation for young females, as well as your sons, to say, this is how a real man treats his queen. You know, pushing you out and putting your hands on, that doesn't do it.
Yeah, that's true. See, because a lot of these guys were into this macho thing, almost like a pimp mentality. And I would say, no, look, you know, you can, there's a thing of being strong enough to be gentle, okay? Yeah. You know, really, like, that's the way to really win a woman, okay? Win her with kindness, because there's not a lot of guys doing that. So you can win her with being kind and gentle, because you'll stand out. It's almost like, wow, where did he come from? You know, I said, so, you know, those are the little tools, you know, of just learning, like, you know, like even how to deal with anger, you know, not giving people that power over you and stuff to, you know, make you act a certain way. And even in relationships, hey, if you can't respect a woman, then maybe that's not who you need to be with. So
I'm
walk away from it.
I'm going to have a question with you, but I'm going to ask you a question really quick. At church, have you ever thought about giving a class for the young men at your church to teach them how to be a man? You know, just because you in your 20s or whatever your age may be, that don't make you a man because you got body hair on your face or other parts of you. That don't make you a man. Being a man, it comes with the morals that you govern yourself with. And I'm just saying, you know, but.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I mean, I never really thought of that at the church. When I did start thinking about that, the pandemic had come up. Yeah, you know, that's a good point, because, like I said, I mostly just would talk to the guys that were in the program. And they would just, you know, have questions. And because it was almost sometimes like being nice to a woman. Because if guys come up with this background of, you know, calling a woman, you know, bad names or whatever, because that was their role models. They watched their fathers and their uncles. It's like a new thing to tell them how to win a lady by being nice, you know, treat her with respect. I remember they would have questions like, fine, I mean, how do you make a woman love you? How do you make a woman love you? You know, I said, well, you don't beat them into submission. I said, you know, if you want to make a woman love you, you treat her with kindness, you know, and respect. I said, the way God has formed the female, you know, when she knows that she's loved and respected, that brings out a side of her that she wants to reciprocate. You know, I said, you know, there's nothing more flattering than a woman, you know, feeling loved, and you got to show that you love her even around her friends and people, where you don't cuss her out in front of her friends or your friends. You respect her, you know, you treat her like a queen, and then in turn, she'll treat you like you're a king. You know, I said, you know, there's a method to this, and once you get into it, you're not counting who's doing the most favors for the other person. You know, well, I was nice to you and you didn't do, hey, you know what? You're my queen. Okay. We don't keep count. We're a team, you know,
that's
and
right.
That's how it goes. You know, I mean, cause I used to even do couples counseling and I would just tell the guys, no, you know, got to learn how to communicate. You know, and watch what you say, because once you get certain things out there, you can't put the bullet back in the gun.
Okay.
You know, you can't call a woman a whole bunch of bad names. Then, oh, I'm sorry, my bad. No, it's kind of too late.
No, it don't work that way.
Yeah.
Got a question for Larry.
Yes. Yes, Larry. I guess my question would be, you know, you're speaking about role models. I mean, it kind of brought up this question. Who was your role models? I mean, I know you're married, and you know, I'm sure you treat your wife like she's a queen. But when you was growing up and stuff, who was your heroes and role models?
You know, I'm trying to think. I mean, that's sad. I can't say my dad. I mean, my dad was my role model in the sense my dad always worked, but. My dad wasn't the kind of guy that if you had a problem, you talked to my mother about it. And my mother used to say, I remember growing up when we were little, your dad loves you because he works hard and takes care of you. And your dad's father died when he was very young, so your dad doesn't know how to show affection and things like that. So my dad was my role model in the sense of always knew to try to have some type of job to be independent and to be able to take care of your family. But I think other role models might have been maybe people I would meet and I'd say, okay, you know, I like this person. I like how he acts. I mean, I might have had a friend that had a father that was he was almost like, if you've ever seen, like, Leave It to Beaver's dad or Father Knows Best. You know, oh, hey, you know, come on, that's not nice. You shouldn't say that. You shouldn't do that. And I say, my goodness, is he for real? You know, my dad would just come over and cuss us out. No, do that again, okay? You know, or something. But so it wasn't. Yeah, but he was a good provider. You know, he was a good provider. It was spare the rod, spoil the child. So you knew you were going to get it. I mean, my mother was, you know, one of these things. I mean, it was just certain little things. And we grew up in Watts. I don't know if you're familiar with California. But my parents were separated. We came from Detroit. And so my mother was separated. So we lived in Watts, didn't have a lot of money. But mom always, you know, said, you know, we had to have values. You know, I remember one time, this may seem silly, I think I stole a Tootsie Roll from this little corner store. And I went, Mom, guess look what I got, you know, and stuff. And my mother said, what? I just paid for stuff. I said, yeah, Mom, I just put this in my pocket. My mother walked me, turned around, walked all the way back to the store and made me turn
apologize.
That thing roll in and apologize to the guy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And she said,
yeah.
We don't do that. I work too hard. My mother was doing day work at the time. She said, I work too hard. You know,
mm-hmm.
We don't steal. I don't care what these other kids in the neighborhood are doing. We don't steal in this family. If I can't afford to buy it for you, then you don't need it.
Need it. Hello.
You know, so, you know, so that was probably my role model.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. No, Chris, am I not talking about the book enough? Did you guys, you know, because sometimes I will wander off.
Okay. Well, that's just it, darling. Don't worry about it. Hold on 1 second.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Don't go nowhere.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Mr. Buford was trying to reach me. I guess he wanted to talk, but he got a call. If you want to talk to my guest, you're going to have to dial 347-945-6003 and hit the 1 key. If you want to talk to Larry Pye before our time runs out, because we got about maybe a couple of minutes left on the clock. And with that being said, I just want you to know, Larry, that once you be on the show, you can always come back because you're always welcome, because it'll be home for you. And
oh,
so,
well, thank you.
And even though we didn't talk much about the tinderbox, you know, we can talk about that.
I want people to know it is an exciting book, okay? You know,
right.
As crazy as it is, it's based on a true story, you know, about a kid I met in juvenile hall and stuff, and he had an abusive, crazy dad. And so, you know, it's just really a storyline. And, you know, I had the guy grow up and become a successful attorney like Johnny Cochran, you know, and stuff. And then we go back into his past. Because everyone has a story, believe me. You know, and that's one thing I learned as a probation officer. You cannot judge a book by its cover. You know, because sometimes someone will think, oh, my goodness, look at that guy. He's in a three-piece suit and a briefcase. You know, why is he even on probation? And then you find out he's done the most horrendous thing you can think of. You know, I mean, so you just can't judge a book by its cover. And like I said, I have some of that stuff in my book, you know, and it's just about, you know, human nature, you know. And like I said, I hope, you know, people will understand it's an exciting read. You know, there's intrigue and psychological drama and diverse characters. And a lot of times people will see someone they know, or they may see themselves in the story. You know, so, you know, I just wanted people to know that even though it seems like a dark subject, it has romance and, you know, friendship, trust, you know, and believe it or not, it actually has a happy ending. You know, so, and I'm on Facebook, you know, I got a Twinkle Box webpage.
Okay, well, I just want you to know, Mr. Pye, you had a Larry Buford here. He wanted to say hello, and he's sorry that he missed the time.
Oh, Larry,
say hi to you.
LB.
I told him you had to come back for another show because time has ran out. We are down by 1 minute and counting. So,
okay. And thank you, and I enjoyed talking with you, you and Chris. And
oh,
I appreciate
you. So we'll get you back here, and Larry wants to say hi to you. Go ahead and say
okay.
Hi, Larry.
Hey, Larry Pye.
Hey, how's it going?
You sound good on the radio, fella.
Well, I mean, you're right, but you're being very kind.
I'm still peeking into that twinkle box.
Okay.
You know?
thank you for recommending me, Larry.
Else. Twinkle box. I said, don't mean that. That's nasty. You know, people always say to their daughter.
Well, thank you. Terry Lyle, you are the sweetest. Thank you so much.
And Mr. Pye, call me when you want to come back and do part two so we can talk in detail about the Twinkle Box.
Okay, I sure will. And it was so nice meeting you guys and talking with you. I appreciate that.
Yes. But if you just go to my page, Terry E. Lyle, and you'll see the thing that says unmask, and that way you can just share it to your page. It'll be there on your page. Just share from my page.
Okay.
All right, darling. And you got my phone number.
I'm off.
Yeah. All right, you take care of Doofit.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, that's a wrap, right, and thank you, Larry, for being here with me and Chris. And I'm gonna text you how to that phone number, the 323. That's your cell phone, right?
Uh huh. Yeah, this is my cell phone.
Okay, I'm gonna text you on the cell phone. Show you how to get to the episode. Talking tonight.
Yeah, okay, I appreciate it. See, because you and
Chris, no problem,
you
darling.
Gotta sound. You guys sound young, so you guys know how to do all this stuff. But
No, Chris is a baby. I ain't young. I just look good for my age.
I'm the youngest one on the show. That's it. Yeah.
Okay, well, text me that, Terry. I appreciate it, and I really enjoyed talking with you guys.
Same here. I'm going to text that to you, information right now, so I've done your phone number so that I can 323-401, and I'm not going to get the last part. It's nobody's business but mine. Okay, well, I'm going to send you the information.
Okay.
Take care.
All right, and you guys
will have my
safe
phone number, so you can always reach back out to me.
Okay, I sure will.
All right.
Thanks again. Okay, bye, Chris.
Bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.